Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. It is your host, Mike, and you guys know if I'm running a solo show, it is a Coffee Time Kicks episode, and I got the homie Dez here. And if you don't know Dez, he is going to be the chief content creator for the one and only Nice Kicks. And Dez, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Excited to be here and talk to you.
Hey, man. I appreciate you being here. I know you're busy. I mean, again, chief content creator. I mean, that should tell you all you need to know if you're listening to that. There's a lot of work involved. You know, out here just cutting clips. The man is really working out here. And I mean, first things first, I mean, I always like to ask these people coming on with me, if you're jumping out, go and get a cup of coffee, go and get, you know, some caffeine somewhere, what's the shoe you're putting on, man?
Foam runners.
Okay.
Yeah, honestly, if you see me out in public, you'll probably see me in the same pair of foam runners that probably need to be replaced, just worn down. And yeah, but I love the shoe. Sad that everything went the way it did, but
yeah,
I love it too much to stop wearing it. So,
so right, you broke it in. It's your shoe now. You can just ignore the other stuff.
Yeah, I think like me and Speed are probably like the only people that just wear them every single day because it's just I can't take it off. But I will say that's my like go-to everyday shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the Climacool Laced
came out.
I have those, and I really like those a lot more than the original Climacools. They fit better. So I'm rocking that one. I only had them for like a week, but I've worn them maybe 2-3 days already. And then everybody's getting on the running shoe wave, so Evo SL, I tried out yesterday. I want to try it out some more. So those are two new ones that I have that I'm like, let's see. But foam runners for me every day.
What I just heard, are you an Adidas guy? Because you just named three Adidas off. Is that like happy accident, or is it more of your preferred brand?
If you go in my closet, you'll see like tons of variety.
Yeah.
Foam runner Adidas, technically, you know.
It's kind of bordering at that point.
But no, the Evo Cell, like in the Climacool, I just got recently, so that's why I named those. If I was to say some other brands, I have some. I don't know. I can't think of them off the top. The Converse Weapon Shea Pink.
Oh, yeah. That's the premium version they came out with?
Yeah, I really like wearing that. It's just, you know, I wear it sparingly because I don't want to, like, beat them down because they're already, like, vintage looking.
Yeah.
But I do like that one's comfortable. I like wearing that a lot. And then, I do like Adidas.
I do laugh, though, you know, as, you know, sneaker collectors, we have all these shoes, and we'll sit there and destroy like 4 or 5 until you can't do nothing with them anymore. They're like, okay, I guess I'll try something new that's been boxed up in a corner for a while. So I totally get it, and especially as being in Texas where it's a million degrees at any given moment, foam runners, the Climacools, the Evos, all super lightweight shoes that your foot's not microwaved in, so it makes sense to me.
Yeah, for sure. Can I pause real quick? I have something popped up on me. It says in picture mode closed to maintain recording quality. Oh, wait, here. All right, we're good. I think
you get it. Oh, don't worry. We'll edit that out. Cool. So, Dez, I mean, people know you from Nice Kicks. I know that's probably, you know, where you get the most attention from, of course. But where did it all start? Was sneakers the thing you always wanted? Were you into that all the time? Content creation? Where's the origins of Dez in this, you know, where you are now and where you started from?
Yeah, I definitely have like a full circle moment story, but just getting into shoes, I mean, as a kid with Space Jam,
there you go.
Seeing Michael Jordan, I was too young to really see like the Bulls days, but I was living in Maryland in 2004, like right, you know, MJ Wizards time as well.
Yeah.
So there's photos of me, like, as a kid with, like, Air Jordan 9s, Air Jordan 16s, and stuff like that, just randomly.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I was in, like, high school, so around the 2009 to 13 time, where sneakers also, like, really popped off.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for that generation of kids. So being in high school, looking at, like, 23isback.com and Nice Kicks and just trying to, like, learn as much as possible when it came to all the retro Jordans.
Yeah.
Yeah, just going to the physical Nice Kicks store to actually collect or, like, buy shoes.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, I was growing up in Maryland for a little bit, so Foamposites were a huge thing as well. So being in Texas, not having so much access to getting Foamposites, but knowing them and, like, knowing, like, or just how cool they were to me, I kind of made it, like, my thing. I was like, I'm going to get as many Foamposites as possible.
You were the foam guy.
Yeah, it's cool. Electric blues and electric greens, like, started metallic reds, I think, started my foam journey in high school. But
nice.
Yeah, I think just being, like, super curious about sneakers and sneaker culture in general, and then being able to, like, go and, like, line up and camp out at Nice Kicks as a kid or as a teenager, and just kind of snowballed from there.
Nice.
Mixed that in with, I think, my just overall interest in pop culture and media. It just was like a perfect synergy.
It all just came together right.
And then, like I said, growing up and being able to shop at Nice Kicks and then working for Nice Kicks, start of the pandemic. It was just full circle. Yeah. So I have, like, tweets about me, like, in high school trying to get a job and, like, stuff like that. So yeah, it was cool when it finally happened.
That's awesome. So did you after you moved from Maryland, did you move down to Austin?
Yeah, so I was kind of back and forth.
Okay.
A little bit. Split parents.
Gotcha, okay. Yeah.
So I finally settled down in Austin in about 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. What college did you go to? You mentioned you were in college down there.
Texas State.
You went to the same school as my youngest brother. Okay. What year did you graduate?
17.
I think he might have been a year. You know what? He might have graduated in 17, actually. No, I lied. He graduated, I think, in 19. So he might have been a couple years after you.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I remember, it's funny, because I went to Baylor. Okay. My buddy, me and my good friend, we would drive from Waco down to Nice Kicks, like, every, you know, a couple times a month, just to, you know, go to the shop. I remember they did their first, was it Black Saturday sale? This was, oh man, I think 2011. We left Waco like at 6 in the morning to stand in line to go into the shop. It's such a cool place, and Nice Kicks being, like, one of the OG, like, sneaker blogs and still sustaining to this day, even, you know, through the kind of the ebbs and flows of sneakers. I mean, you working, I mean, that's such a cool thing to be in one of the originals, you know? Does that put a little pressure on you when you do the job every day?
That's a great question. I have a lot of, like, I know a lot of the lore of Nice Kicks since I was here. I know a lot of the OGs that worked here.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the history because I was here for it. So when I got the role, I didn't feel like it was kind of like I knew what I was doing off rip.
Awesome.
Even though I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I got the job with Nice Kicks as a social media coordinator in 2020, the week the pandemic started. Mm-hmm.
Oh, dang.
So, yeah, it was like the world was flipped upside down. So, I think at the same time, nobody else knew what they were doing, too, because of that. So it kind of made it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But I came into the role just, like, with my social media experience kind of in, like, vision for it. Like, I kind of knew, like, how to do the job. I just didn't know where we would go with it. And that takes time. But the pressure didn't actually come until I had my moments of learnings, I guess.
You know?
Like, I have, like, social media, everything can be misconstrued or perceived whatever type of way. You might post something that people will just, like, what's that tweet? Like, you can say, I like pancakes, and somebody will be like, you hate
what you mean? You like exactly.
So I had a few moments, and I had some, you know, sneaker media OGs publicly basically come for me.
Gosh.
Yeah, I had to take it on the chin and just keep it moving. But and just know that, like, there's just different waves, you know? And I already, like, being here for 5 years, when I started to now, I'm like, dang, like, I have old head tendencies now. Not the way it's supposed to be, and now like I know when I started, that's just what I was going through. So there was never any pressure until I felt the responsibility of, I guess, carrying the NiceX brand or being the voice of it. And you know, sneakers is something that people like are definitely passionate about, care about a lot, and they hold on to it. So, and that's great. Like I love
yeah.
it. Like, that's what you want when you work in something. I never took it like super personally. It's a good position to be in.
Nah, definitely, man. And you know, starting a pandemic is crazy because like you're a week, you're like, yeah, I got a job. Oh my God, what in the world is going on? We can't leave the house.
I mean, my interview with Matt Hafto was in a coffee shop, and they told us we had to leave because of what happened. Yeah.
Oh, so, dang.
It was wild.
So when you started, I mean, it's kind of one of those blessings in disguise because during a pandemic, that's when The Last Dance was, you know, kind of fast-tracked and we got, and then Jordans just were, blew up at, you know, I wouldn't say they weren't popular before, clearly they were, but they reached this level of popularity where you couldn't even get a pair if you wanted. So with that happening and you being at social media, on the social media side of things, did it make things like, oh man, this is, although I can't really go anywhere, it gave you something to write about and to really approach your audience with. Did that help out some with that boom?
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. It's kind of one of those learnings where since I wasn't working in sneakers beforehand, I wasn't so, like, on top of everything happening. Yeah. To be honest, like, I had graduated college at 17, from 17 to 20. I didn't have a real, like, career job, so I wasn't, like, I was... Sneakers couldn't really be my main focus because I didn't have money. So I kind of took a step back. And I wasn't super dialed in. I know like 28, 17, 18, 19, you have like the rise of like Off-White, Travis, Air Jordan 1s are going crazy. So I enter the role and The Last Dance is popping off. In my mind at the time, I was just like, this is normal. Like, this is Jordan. Like, this is sneaker culture. Jordan.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, like, you know, the past year or year and a half. I don't know what month it is. It's now like, oh, you can't really rely on Jordans, retro Jordans, to, like, drive your content every day.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
People just not, like, that really not checking for them like they were 4 or 5 years ago. It's been interesting to see it. Like, you know, like a big part of like the content in 2020 and 2021 was every sneakers drop. Like, the sneakers memes, right? That's what we all were like, we're going to take an L today.
Yep.
Now it's not necessarily like that. So it's like, you can't really run sneakers L's memes because they just don't hit the same like they used to. So, again, something that like you just kind of learn with experience and you see and you're like, oh, wow, like, it's waves. And I think Matt kind of touches on, like, he's always kind of talked about sneakers being cyclical and like there's always these periods. I think the biggest difference today though is the social media aspect to it, where it's like algorithms drive a lot of it, and sneaker culture is still very much a bubble. Sneakers is a huge thing. Everybody wears sneakers. You'll see somebody wearing a pair of Air Jordan 1s that doesn't know anything about them, but like that's just what it is. But sneaker culture is still very like tight,
like niche, like very
and we might think like this Joe Fresh Goods, this J Tips, this Salehe Bembury shoe is like we have to get it and it will sell out. Like, I'm not saying that, but to the mainstream mass audience that is sneaker, they like sneakers, who is that,
you know? Yeah, it means nothing to someone just going out, I need a new pair of shoes, I don't care about XYZ designers, like, oh, these look cool, next. Like,
yeah, so it's very interesting to see like how like we might put so much weight into something that just isn't on the same scale as like an Air Jordan 1 that everybody knows, you know? So
sure.
In connection with like how algorithms and social media work. So it's just, it's always interesting to kind of like take a step back and look at it and just understand like how niche sneakers is, but that's kind of how it should be.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. You're 100% right. I think sneakerheads, we really sometimes think that we're a bigger consumer base than we really are, because most people think of shoes like tires on a car. They're like, hey, these are good for now. When they blow out, I got to get another one. And that's where the money comes from like to the brand. So that's always going to be the core. Of course, they still take care of us as these people in this hobby who love to get deep dive into these things. But you're right on the money. It's like, we're this small little bubble and we're just all kind of amongst ourselves. And, you know, things like Nice Kicks are trying to give us, you know, feed us that information that we're looking for. But it can be so hard. I mean, just being doing a podcast and then just watching things like Twitter of all things, which I don't advise anybody to watch because God, it's terrible. But everyone wants their own thing. And they'll get mad at someone else for posting something. It's like, so when you were with your team, when you guys are discussing, hey, what we're going to put out today, how we're going to talk about it, do you all ever think about, okay, if we talk about this, we're going to get XYZ comments positive, XYZ comments negative, and how do we deal with them? Because I would love to say sneakerheads are just, oh, we all love everything, but you know how some are just, they love the negativity of it. How do you guys, as a team, kind of process that before you decide to go live with anything?
That's a good question. Before I answer, is the audio fine in here?
Oh, you're good, dude. Yeah. I have a little bit of background, but it's nothing that is, nothing that's determining. Then you're good.
At any point, let me know, because I'm a public place, so it might, I don't know what they're doing.
You're fine. You're fine.
Yeah, to answer your question, it's not very, on a daily basis, you can't really plan for it, because it's very reactive.
Yeah,
it's a lot of like news or information will come in, or just like everybody else, we're monitoring social media and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
We have great relationships with brands, and I think brands do a good job at, you know, sharing their information, but it is very much what they want to share.
Definitely.
And I think in the past, prior to my time here, the role of media was so much more important. So brands leverage their media relationships more. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody can be their own media outlet or their own, you know, they can share the news how they want to. And the brands can do that themselves as well. You know, they don't need to always get placement for a specific thing on this outlet to get seen. They just post it themselves. So I think that makes our job a little bit, you know, not more challenging, but you just kind of have to like have a pulse on everything, and that can get a little tough when it runs 24/7. So
yeah,
I do think just kind of peeling back the curtain a little bit, like Nice Kicks isn't a big team at all, and I think a lot of people think like they see the number of followers and stuff, and they're like, oh man, they're huge.
Yeah,
it's really not like that at all. So. Very small team, and I think a lot of sneaker outlets that you might read or consume operate kind of small as well. So yeah, everybody's just running on empty a lot, trying to get it right. But I think, like I mentioned, it's not very, you don't plan too much. I think there's content you can plan for with embargoes and big like launches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just content that you might want to share, like based upon what's happening. Like we know NBA Finals, NBA Finals is happening these days, so we know like we're gonna have to do something with that. So
yeah,
the type of preparation you do, other events, you kind of just get mentally prepared for them rather than
for sure.
Like, all right, here's what we're gonna run today. But that's just kind of how we do things. We definitely have, you know, stuff that we like to, or we put together a story or something, like a post that we're like, all right, like, I'm preparing this and I'm going to spend 2 days to do it and we're going to post it on this day. And then sometimes we have our bigger, I guess, initiatives, like last year, Black History Month. I think every week we highlighted, I think in total, 28 like Black-owned businesses and seekers. So that's something that we kind of definitely have to prepare more ahead, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, there's those, but on a daily basis, it's very reactive.
Perfect. No, that's awesome, man. Yeah, and to really follow up with that piece is, I mean, of course, Nike's Kicks is out there. You have, of course, Complex. You have Sneaker News. You know, Hype Beast, High Snobiety. Do you guys ever find yourselves in a, I mean, just like a newspaper or any, like, news outlet, do you guys kind of find yourself in a race to be first sometimes? Like, I got to get, be kind of beat them to the punch? Or is it more like, you know what, we'll sit back and it really doesn't matter because of just the different ways people consume news now doesn't necessarily pay to be first all the time?
Yeah, I think certain outlets don't care.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I can't speak to anybody else. I think social media is just a beast. We're all at the mercy of every platform's algorithm.
And yeah,
how they change things every day. Like, I'm a nerd about this, and I know when I have a theory that, like, everybody's numbers will be lower than they're supposed to be based upon, like, how I just know content's supposed to perform.
Yeah.
And when that happens, Instagram is rolling out a new feature or they're updating something, and I've been proven right every time because shortly after something changes. And I'm just like...
Sounds about right.
when you're working with something like that, it's just like... It's out of your hands, you know? Like, yeah, there's nothing you can really do about it unless you pay to play. And that's just the way of it. That's the way it goes. But in terms of getting stuff up first or trying to beat people or other outlets, I think some definitely that is a goal, because with sneakers, you might have a lot of audience crossover.
Yeah.
Or overlap. So... You don't want to be second to last.
For that, sure.
That algorithm's already shown it to some people, and you might not see it again because it's already seen by somebody else, or they might see it and be like, oh, I already seen this, and keep scrolling. So, but with that, I think presentation is a lot of it too. I think the use of headlines, visual eye grabbers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, everybody says like clickbait, but like, you're scrolling, like, can you tell me how many, like, if you're on Instagram for a session, how many posts are you going through?
Yep.
Like, it's a lot. So it's just like, how do you grab somebody's attention? And, you know, I've made over like 15,000 Instagram posts while I've been here.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Can't say that, like, I'm perfect and I've never resorted to certain tactics to get eyes, but I try not to. I try to be as, like, you know, respectable as I can. But sometimes you get caught up in the game. You try your best. I saw a post the other day from somebody else, and it was like about so-and-so shoe, and like the headline was like just not true. And I was just like, this is not true. Like,
what are you doing here?
Yeah. So, but you're making so much. You're making so much content. You're putting out so much things. It's just like, what's the best way to get people to engage with this?
Yeah,
you're not thinking twice because you're moving on to the next thing. So I get it. I definitely get it, and I feel empathy for everybody in social media.
Yeah, no, it's always, man, it's always a, when they say the goalpost being moved when it comes to the algorithm, it is constantly. You never know which way it's going to move, front, back, sideways. You're trying to chase this algorithm, this, you know, way to get information in front of people is nuts. And be, you know, it's smart because you actually say, I study it. You find a way, you're looking at the trends. And I think a lot of people will go in and say, oh, I'm blaming the algorithm. It's like, well, yes, but a lot of people won't actually sit and do the work like you're doing, Des. It's like, hey, you know what? Let's figure out why it's doing this. We'll figure out how it's doing this and come back and try to combat it, as opposed to just sitting on your hands and like, well, I guess the algorithm didn't like our post today. That's something that's super respectable. And I really look at that as like, hey, look, the man is doing, like, that's why he got the job where he's at, because he's really putting in the work. And that's something that's been really coming up a lot, I feel like, as we you know, get into these different spaces. We hear different people talk who all want to be in, you know, maybe work for these companies or work, you know, want their work to be seen like them. In your opinion, what would you say people should work on? Like, what is the groundwork they need to put in before they can, let's say, work for Nice Kicks or be able to elevate their content to a level to be seen?
Good question. I think something I don't do enough of, which I wish I could. I think to create, you have to consume.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're all creative geniuses out here that can just create off the top. And if you are, yep. then you wouldn't be doing something like this. If you were a creative genius, you would be doing creative genius things, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's not to put anybody down, but I think it's just like we have to consume to understand how things work
mm-hmm.
and take from what we can and then create our own. Mm-hmm. So I think for anybody that's trying to start off in media, it's just like, or content creation, I think just get a really good feel of what you like to talk about mm-hmm. or do or create, and then understand how to do it. You know, I think a big yeah. thing when I started in Ice Kicks, a lot of sneaker social media was just like pictures. It was just yeah. like, here's a photo of a shoe and here's the caption. And I was just like, this isn't how like media works anymore. You know? So we introduce, you know, templates and like headlines on social media. And it wasn't something that like we invented. It was just what I saw being done at other real media entities and, you know, accounts. I do think we were one of the first ones to start it in sneakers, and then yeah. now it's like everything has words on it. It's just understanding, like I said, social media behaviors and trends, or not trends necessarily, but like really kind of understanding the psychology of social media. And I can, like I said, I'm a nerd about it, so I could like go on a whole tangent, but yeah, just like really becoming good at what you like
yeah.
and being able to talk about it or whatever, and then understanding how to like create based upon what's happening with social media. So, yeah. And then just creating and understanding like, oh, this worked, this didn't.
Yeah.
Analyzing a lot.
For sure. No, and that's one of the things I think people fail to evolve sometimes. They feel like, oh, I just post a picture with this witty little caption and it becomes, oh, I'm qualified to do this, that, or the third. But again, it's the studying of other platforms, not just sneakers, and understanding that there's, although it is our little niche, our little hobby, we still have to take the outside things. Like, look at the big things, like news channels, what is working, what is getting those eyes, and what's keeping people's attention. I think that you said it perfectly, Des, like, is a constant study of the outlet to see what works best. I know, because people have, like I said, people want to go in and say, oh, I want to work for, again, that company, that big company, fill in the blank, one day, but they're constantly, all they're doing is putting up, like, a fit pic or a pic, taking pictures of your shoe. Now, if your job wants to be in photography, that, hey, I got you. But people are like, oh, I want this position. But what are you doing to show that you have studied it? Because I always like to tell people their Instagram, their social media is a visual resume. Because if you go apply for, let's say you guys open a position in social media, I'm guessing first thing you're going to do is like, let's go check out this person's platform. What have they done? To see if they have actually, what are they doing to bring in people? What are they doing to provide value before you guys would even take the next step of even discussing with that person?
Yeah, I think we've definitely had like a few rounds of hires and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say there's any like particular first thing that I do. Mm-hmm. But what it comes down to for me is like, can so-and-so person do the job we're looking for?
Mm-hmm.
And I make sure to really vet that by like having them do it during the interview.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
That would just tell me everything I need to know, you know? But I think we're in a very interesting time right now in sneaker media because I think there was a generational jump or gap from when Instagram first started. You started mm-hmm. to see like from, like, I think the Nike Talk and message forum boards and stuff, and then you saw social media, it kind of jumped. But then now, from 2021 and 2 or whatever, like, TikTok and Reels popped off into terms of content creation. Yeah. Okay, so that was just, like, social media jumps. But within sneakers, there was a huge jump because 2015 with the sneakers app, and 2012 with, like, no more midnight releases and stuff,
yeah,
really took a lot out of, like, those in-person experiences. So now a 22-year-old was born in 2003 or something like
that. Don't say that out loud. That just made me feel extra old, man.
Wait, hear me out. Like, a 2003 baby would have been 12 in 2015 when sneakers app launched. So they're not even old enough to really, really, like, consume sneakers. So you got to give them another, like, 4 years to, like, 16. So now they're in 2019. 2019 sneakers, like, look at that time period and, like, what was popping in 2019, all right? Right before, guess what? A global pandemic. So sneaker culture IRL is already drastically different than what we grew up on. But when media companies are trying to hire people, how many young people, because, like, truth be told, like, be honest, like, with social media, like, you want young people, you know? You don't want 30s and 40-year-olds. How many of them can actually talk to or speak on sneaker culture at large, because they don't have those experiences, you know? So we grew up on the blogs, and I think a lot YouTube and, like, things that documented moments in sneaker history. But I don't know if anybody's noticed, prior to 2015, if you go on any, like, blog or website, all that stuff is wiped because there was, like, a big server change across the board.
I did notice that. If you go back to look older stuff, like, the pictures are gone. Sometimes just the articles are just missing now. It's crazy.
Right. So there was just a wipe. So, like, sneaker history has kind of been, like, lost. And now with today's social media, like, I think Instagram just started, like, indexing on Google recently. But, like, you can't find things as easy as you once could when it came to sneaker history and sneaker culture. So
very much true.
It's just going to be a lot different. I think you're looking at, I can't forecast it, really, because it's so different. Like, we have somebody that's 25 on our team, and, like I said, like, age gaps from different periods and sneakers, it's significant. Where it's like a story like X shoe is important because of this just does not hit today.
Very different.
What does this look like? What does this look like in 5 years? And, you know, that's what I'm here to like, you know, maintain and preserve. But it's definitely interesting because, you know, the world's changing, stuff's getting more expensive, jobs, media's doesn't have the dollars that it used to from, you know, website, like, ad revenue and partnerships and stuff. So that's why you're seeing, I think, a rise in creator-led media. You're seeing it with, like, sports, too. Like, athletes are becoming the...
They're sideline guys now, man. This is crazy.
You know? So, yeah, I think it's just we're in an interesting time in media, and, you know, I really like that you mentioned earlier how Nice Kicks has kind of persevered through a lot of change, where you see some other, not even sneaker blogs or outlets, just other outlets in general, they don't exist anymore. So it is a significant thing that I think people don't really recognize, that Nice Kicks has been able to stick around this long.
Yeah, it's hard out there. Like I said, it's not even just sneakers, but everything. But just because the world has changed so much in the past, shoot, I guess we can even say 20 years from 2005 to 2025. There's been such a big shift in so many different things so many times. Yeah, you say the last 5 years. I mean, even since us getting out of the out of COVID and the pandemic, I mean, there's been a big shift. I mean, we went from days of people wanting to, you know, paying $400 or $500 for a pair of Panda Dunks to now they're $20 on a resale market. So you can just see that, like, the things that people have liked have such a drastic change in, like, say, just 5 years. And it's, again, cyclical. There's going to be things like, we're back to mesh runners. What's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years? Like, we could be back to Jordans, or we could be back to something completely different. Who knows? But it's really just a time will tell kind of deal. Like you said, it's hard to forecast because right now we can just see what people are buying. I mean, of course, there are trends, but everything's kind of the same direction right now. What, again, people are actually using their dollars for. And then, of course, you guys can see what content works, what content doesn't work, just by analytics on the websites. But something I've noticed, and, you know, just talking about just people, the way they consume things, it's like, it's not just I want to look at sneakers anymore. I've come across a couple of YouTubers, a couple just posts, but it seems like sneaker brands are investing into the full-on fashion individual now. Not just talking about the shoes, but the clothes, the pants, you know, everything. And so it seems like they're shifting to just a sneakerhead to the full-on, again, fashion influencer, for lack of better words. And that seems like, because that's, people are more into clothes now than they've ever been, it seems like.
Yeah, I think, here's a question for you. What is a sneakerhead?
You know, it ranges. I can even give a definition. I feel like there's levels to it. If someone who just, hey, I like shoes. Someone, I like just Nikes. I just like Jordans. I just like this. I just enjoy sneakers as a whole. I feel like there's so many layers to it. It's not a clear definition. Just the fact I like shoes. That's kind of the umbrella term of it.
Right. And I think yeah, that's exactly. I don't think sneaker heads are being created anymore at a large scale. I think sneaker heads might be an endangered species in a sense.
You can see that though with the younger crowd, just not as popular anymore.
It's just the hobby of it, whether it be collecting or knowing, like, I think that's the key part, was the knowing about the lore and why this shoe is important, or it, like, this one is, you know, like a shoe only having 1,000 pairs back in the day would be like, man. Now it's just like, okay, cool, everyone's doing, you know,
and yeah,
everything becomes a marketing scheme or a gimmick or whatever. So yeah, I don't know if younger people care, and I think that's, for me, what a sneakerhead is kind of have to have that knowledge of the, I don't want to use the word culture, but like the history of, you know, sneaker culture. So if people aren't learning that and they're not experiencing it for themselves, what is a sneakerhead? So I forgot your question.
No, I was just saying how, like, again, you really answered it kind of inadvertently there, because we talk about the extinction of a sneakerhead, because it's not just like us who can go around and sit around and talk about shoes from, you know, now back down to the 90s and 80s. But like I said, kids don't really care so much now. And that's why I say I feel like that more companies are moving towards the fashion individual as opposed to a sneakerhead individual.
Right. So I always think it's funny, like that joke about how, like, sneakerheads can't dress. Because it's like, I mean, shit, it might be true.
I'm not gonna deny it. I'm not the most fashionable dresser out there.
But here's the thing. That's another funny thing. Was just like, you know, granted, we, like, you never see it in the time that you're in. But like, yeah, looking back at some of these fits, they were awesome. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, the mid 2000s and stuff. But the shoe, like, you could wear whatever shoe you wanted with whatever outfit you wanted. Like, it was just like the shoe was the cool thing. But now, like, no, like, you have to get a whole fit off. And I think that's why. I mean, like we said, sneakerheads is a niche bubble. People are wearing shoes for their outfits. And I always use this reference. I read something one time about, like, the UFC. Mm-hmm. And when the UFC was kind of, like, bubbling, getting hot,
they
realized, like, they don't need to target the UFC fan that's going to buy the pay-per-view. That UFC fan is already going to buy the pay-per-view.
Facts.
They need to target the person that is on the fence about buying the pay-per-view.
Yes.
And market towards the people that aren't, like, even checking for it. Because once you have their money, you have more money.
You're right.
that's what I think sneakers is. They're not marketing to sneakerheads because sneakerheads are already going to buy the sneakers.
They got
to
spend their money regardless.
They need to get the people that aren't. And, like, you see it with all the type of partnerships and endorsements and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I think New Balance does a great job at, like, trying to hit various different markets with all of their collaborations and collaborators. And you're seeing other brands kind of do the same thing.
So yeah,
that's what it is, and that's the tough thing about sneaker culture. It's like we might still adopt a shoe as a shoe for sneaker culture, but that shoe was never really marketed
in for us.
Yeah, it was marketed because they wanted to get this consumer. So it's always interesting to see. Like every shoe is different, and I think that's why like. When we introduced the Nice Kicks Awards, it was meant for sneaker culture and not so much the business or, like, the biggest sellers. And, like, because if we're really going off of that, like, Jordan 1 Mitch should win every year, right?
You know? Yeah, exactly. It's the shoes that people don't think about. Again, we're the drop in the bucket. Those mids, those Monarchs that, you know, pick a random runner out there that we don't talk about. Those are the high sellers. Yeah, it's crazy.
I know it's probably because Nike doesn't want to lose this shoe. As for what it is, like the Monarch, like the Monarch is meant for that dad or whatever that just needs a comfortable shoe, right? But like, maybe it's just because like I'm getting older now too. But like, it is not a bad shoe. Like if you look at it, you can do a lot. And I know, like I think it was Martine Rose,
yep,
did a collaboration and like made it all crazy looking. But like, let's be honest, like. If you put some hype collaboration and some hype push behind the Monarch, it would fly.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know if they should, because like that's not what it's meant for. It's not meant for us. They definitely could. They could definitely fucking reverse the swoosh on that thing and like
it'd be a thing. It would be an absolute crazy thing. But like you said, it's not meant for us. They don't have to do anything. Why spend the money on retooling something where you already have a core audience that's going to go to Academy or Dick's Sporting going to grab six pairs each a year?
And you don't want that audience to feel like you know, like that's their shoe. Like
they're like, leave us alone. Let us mow grass and barbecue in that shoe. Don't do anything to this. Okay, go ahead.
No, I just think like with like sneaker heads being a certain age demographic, like it'd be the perfect time to, you know, do a Monarch push.
You mentioned something before, something that you guys did different, and I like the way that you approached it, but your Nice Kicks Awards, breaking it down, not just by a panel of five or six people, but was it 100 people you reached out to?
Yep.
100 people, everyone in various, you know, places, not just, 100 people in this one spot. You kind of span the internet with this and broke things out into different categories. It wasn't just one through 10, end all be all, but categories. And I like that a lot. Is that something you guys worked on to, you know, really differentiate yourself from other lists out there? Because I think that was probably the best and most concise list I saw, and, you know, I was a part of it as well. So I like that because it gave me the option to say, I do like this one for this category, or I like this one for this category, as opposed to having me to shuffle things around, again, 1 through 10.
Yeah, well, I think we launched the awards in 2023. But it was just all internal. And I think that's when we were at our biggest in terms of staff size.
Okay.
So I was able to collaborate with my coworkers on creating a list for each category and winners for each category. But even then, I just felt like it's still not indicative of sneaker culture at large, in our opinions. And I thought to myself, I can reach out to the 100 people that I think are the most tapped in, you know, that are engaging in this daily, that are creating in this daily. So that's what I planned for last year's awards. I was like, we're going to take it, we're going to expand it, and we're going to include the people that actually are part of this, that
for sure
dictate this, that are the people that are online and talking about this on a regular basis. The reason we went to awards was because I felt like Sneaker of the Year list, we were just outdated. And I think their main objective today is to just drive arguments.
For sure.
There's just no way to actually, like, debate or, like, go, like, like make a list of the top 10 shoes in a year when not all shoes are created equal.
I agree with you.
You'll see a shoe on a list at a certain number because, and like the reason is like, you saw this shoe everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, cool. And then you'll see another shoe and it's like the most limited shoe that nobody could get. But it's like, oh, it was the most popular. And then you'll have another shoe that's a model and it'll have 20 colorways. And it's just like, well, wait a minute. That they're not all created fair.
Yeah, they can all be number one in their own right. It's like...
So I felt like seeing those lists, reading those lists, I was like, the only reason these lists exist are to drive SEO and to drive conversation around arguing about it, which is some people's formula. And like I said, like I feel I have empathy for everybody in media and social media because everybody got to pay the bills. But it just didn't make sense to me. So I was like, all right, we're going to get 100 people and we're going to create these categories. And I don't think the awards are, you know, I don't think we've scratched the surface with like how and what we're doing. It's definitely a stepping stone. Like I mentioned, small team, so we're still like really. But I think we definitely, you know, took a step forward, and I think it's something that might redefine the industry a little bit. And I'm curious to see how other outlets, you know, possibly change their strategies on how they do end of the year stuff. But I will say, like, one big thing that we changed this year is actually I'm gonna hold it. I don't want to share.
That's fine. Keep it. It's not time yet. It's only July. We can... But I did, like, you guys sent trophies out to everybody, didn't you? So that was really cool. It kind of gave them like this kind of piece of like, oh, thanks for recognizing me, not just this post. So that was really cool too.
I think the most meaningful moment I had with it was I was at a I think I was at an All-Star Weekend event last year. So before 2024 awards, and you know, a designer for one of the winners of the shoe, because if it's a shoe that has a person attached to it and a brand attached to it, like a collaboration or a athlete and brand, we send out an award for each.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, so the name gets it and then the brand gets it. And a person from the brand, you know, came up to me and was just like, you know, you made our week. I put the award in front of everybody that was part of the project and everyone's taking photos with it and like,
that's just dope.
Like a lot of validation. That's what also kind of like made me feel like, okay, no, like we need to like really take this seriously and open it up to 100 people, because I don't want to, like, my opinion is, you know, a fifth of the decision making, you know.
Yeah,
I want my decision to be one out of 100. I just felt like I don't want to take away something that is meant for somebody. Like, I don't want to be the deciding factor on like somebody that deserved to win not winning. I want it to be a community vote at whole. So
awesome.
I think the whole idea was to really make it make sense to like me and make it feel fair and really acknowledge all parts of sneakers as much as we could think of at the end of the year, and really like recap and like see like, these were like the shoes. So like that's why we have, you know, we have the basketball shoe of the year for that category. We have three different collaboration awards with the endorsements, the licensing, and the actual collaboration.
Yeah.
Collaborators. We have collaborator of the year. We have themed shoe of the year. I think we're introducing collection of the year this year.
Oh, so, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Like, just so like, that's why I was like, we're not like really like, we're not even close to like being what it could be.
Yeah.
We're just in the baby stage right now. So
yeah,
it was just really like being able to praise and acknowledge, recognize the sneakers that should, and the people that are involved in these projects. I would love to like really work with the brands to like highlight the people behind the projects.
Ooh, yeah.
The brands are very like sensitive, I think. I don't know if sensitive is the right word, but like reserved with opening the door.
Too much information. Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, makes sense. But, yeah.
That's cool, man. And my favorite category on there was the independent. Like, those guys and ladies out there don't always get the shine they deserve from Big List. And with you guys putting them on there as their own category, that was amazing. From, you know, Marsh to John Geiger. You got the Rockwell over at No Two Ways. I mean, those guys deserve that kind of shine because they do stuff from the ground up. And that's awesome that you took the time to say, you know what, they deserve that shine too. So that's awesome. I think they really appreciate that as well.
Yeah, I think that was the category that was like the most rewarding, I guess, to do. because you know it meant more. And to be honest, like, it's a tough category, I think, to do every year because you don't want to just, like, have the same people up there every year. And you don't want to just have somebody up there for the sake of filling
for the heck of it.
But a lot of them, you know, like, it is, I think it's tough because they are smaller, obviously, than the brands. And some might be, I wouldn't say regional, but some might just hit certain groups, you know.
And definitely, like,
I think one of my favorite brands is Clint's.
Like,
Clint's, they're overseas, but their silhouettes are insane. Like,
yeah, okay,
so creative. Like, their outsoles spell Clint's.
Oh, that's dope. Okay,
yeah, and like they have different models, and it's still like each model will have a different outsole, and it will spell Clint's. Like,
interesting.
It's so creative, and but it's just like they need to like have that pop off moment, but they're never gonna have like a brand collaboration because they're on their own brand. So it's like, how do you really pop off? Because they are footwear, you know, they're not like streetwear, and then they collaborate with a big brand for a project. So, you know, and like I think Factory Lab does great work. I think a lot of their stuff is a little bit more experiential. I don't know if experiential is the word, but like it's just a little bit different. And I don't know, like, it's for everyday consumers. So it's like,
for sure,
how do they play a part in all of this? But that's why I have 100 people to help decide. You know, so
just looked up Clint's. Those are pretty cool. I hadn't seen them before, and these are definitely something different. But that is a pretty unique design. It's pretty dope. I might have to try a pair of those out.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're doing everything right, and, you know, they're selling out, but, like, they have their core audience and they're following.
Yeah.
That just to say, like, that category is a tough one to really figure out the proper nominations.
For sure. But that's awesome, man. Like I said, overall, you guys are doing it different there. And again, making an impact on the consumer who sees something different, but clearly making an impact on those who are creating the product. So that's what it's all about, man. Giving that recognition to those who produce these things that we love so much. And again, not making something people are going to argue, of course, but being able to actually put numbers like, hey, 100 people decided this. It wasn't 5 people who removed from this. Like,
people couldn't argue. And I think, like, low-key, like, it hurt us in a way of getting conversation around the awards because it's just like, what are you going to argue?
You can't. You can't at that point.
Yeah, like, the shoe that won, it made sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a list. It's not like, it's not like so-and-so shoe was ranked higher than another shoe that wasn't.
Yeah.
It's like, so silly, you know. So
it's like MVP voting. Like, you know who got one through three, and then you, hey, this person made it to the top. That's it. That's, you can't, you can argue with yourself, but you know the numbers at this point. Yeah, the
nomination is enough to say like the shoe is already talked about, mm-hmm. as it's in high regard. Now it's just determining 100 people that I, like I said, are the most tapped in people to decide it. Which that's who it should be. You know, it shouldn't be whoever, like, just, like, casually consumes sneaker stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's all subjective. Like, there's just no way to actually, like, deem.
Yeah.
Like,
there'll never be a for sure answer anywhere. Yeah. Just, hey, we can back it up with as much data as possible.
And you know, marketing plays a huge factor, I think, in people's opinions on shoes.
Exactly. AE1. I think they're phenomenal. Well, I think that was a sneaker of the year, but that marketing definitely helped push that narrative for them, which was brilliant.
Which, and here's the thing, I think the D-Book 1, I don't think it's a bad shoe.
No.
And I think there was some missteps maybe along the road of rollout. I don't know that for sure. It's just my opinion.
No, I'm in the same boat as you.
But, you know, I judge collaborations and signature sneakers off of how authentic they are to said collaborator or athlete. Mm-hmm. And I think the D-Book 1 is 100% authentic to Devin Booker. It matches him completely. That is a great shoe. It makes sense, you know? And I don't think people really gave it a real chance. Because if you see people wearing it, it looks good on foot. It looks like there's good colorways. I think he did a tremendous job with some of the storytelling with some of the colorways. But you just didn't feel the same energy.
Yeah, like when you look at both AE1 and the book and the book one, it's like it's just night and day when it came to rollouts. And like I said, I think the book one did matches, you know, Booker very well, like personality wise, because he's not super outspoken, but he's gonna get the job done, like the shoe.
And they branded it well. They called it a new classic or something like that. So it's like, I get it. It's just there just wasn't that energy where Adidas. You know, they were making Anthony Edwards the face of Adidas basketball.
Oh, 1,000,000%, yeah.
And I think they internally decided, like, we're going to put all our eggs in this basket, and we're going to win every marketing award we can, and we're going to, you know, chase every moment and capitalize. And that's just what they did because they had a superstar on their hands. Whereas Nike, maybe Devin's just another guy to them. I don't know.
Yeah. You just said we're not in those rooms with them, so we have no idea.
Right. So, like, that's why I don't speak in absolutes. But I do think, like I said, it was a good shoe. It just didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like the Anthony Edwards one, though. Like, it's one of my favorites. If you had asked me this question about, like, what shoe am I wearing every day, like, even a few months ago, like, I would have said that, like, that's up there, you know?
Oh, yeah. Especially when the Lowe's came out, they were so easy to wear. Just, man. Yeah.
And again, sneaker of the year, it needs its own, it wins its own categories, but like, it has 30 colorways. Like, it
can't pick one. Which one do you like the best?
You know, it can't be compared to one release. So, I think, I don't know what we're talking about.
I mean, overall, I just like the thoughtfulness that's put in behind what you do, Des. Like, from the awards to, of course, the content you guys put out, very very thoughtful, making sure that you guys are getting information, you know, correct. So I think anybody, again, who is consuming that really can, you know, hats off to you guys with that. But as we start to, you know, finish up the podcast episode today, anything you guys are working on that you can tell us about that you want people to know about or people that want to look out for?
I think the Nike Speaks Awards is like our big, you know, our big thing that we're going to, you know, kind of have over the next few years to continue to grow that. There will be a little bit of a change in strategy with how we do things.
Okay.
Moving forward, but yeah, that's our big one right now. Kind of like in the stages of finalizing the 100 again. I think this year is a little bit more like I'm trying to be like mindful. I don't want to like exclude and include. Like, you know, I'm trying to like really be careful. And do a little bit more. I guess my biggest thing I think with it was like I don't want to have brand representatives on the panel because it's just biased.
Yeah.
So trying to be careful with that, but like a lot of creators are now getting paychecks from brands and stuff like that. So I'm also trying to like be mindful of how to like work around that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
To make it as fair as possible. Yeah. And there's just so many voices in this space. Like there's just so many like qualified people that really like love sneakers. So I'm trying to do a good job at balancing, you know, some of the more established, I guess, experienced expert voices with some of the more, you know, I guess, newer voices.
Yeah, like a good mix between both.
Right.
Yeah, so, okay.
That's kind of getting worked out. And then, like I said, finalizing some of these categories, making sure every category has the right nominations. So, got that. You'll see that kind of near the end of the year. Working on a new show. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it too much. I think I got something in the works that everybody's been wanting.
Okay.
If everything kind of works out, there's a lot of moving pieces, so much more than I expected. But if all those moving pieces move together,
yeah,
we should have something cool, I think, coming out for people to be able to consume. Something that isn't, like I said, unique to other media or other, I guess, industries, but something that's new to, I think, sneakers.
Okay.
You know, but it will still feel familiar given if you consume other stuff. So just something awesome. That really kind of dives into what you might see, like, talked about on a regular basis. So excited for that. Just need everything to work out.
Yeah. Are you talking visual show or are you talking podcast-style show?
Maybe both.
Maybe both. All right. I like it.
Yeah. I just feel like I think short-form content has become so prominent.
Yeah.
And I think people are trying to, you know, tell the story of sneakers or show off said sneaker and talk about sneakers. But like I said, we consume so quick every day. Where do we get that actual conversation
about
what's happening? Mm-hmm. I think, like, for example, Bima does a very good job at breaking down things. And I think there's more conversation to be had like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not always from a marketing perspective, because it's obviously, like, not skewed perspective, it's just, it's not the consumer perspective.
It's the business side. We're not getting, like you said, the consumer and the personal side
it's
of it. Yeah.
It's cool to get it, but it doesn't always speak for the person that just is a consumer. So getting to have those conversations that are a little bit more, I guess, like I mentioned, it does a great job because it's digestible for anybody to see and read, consume it. But I don't think, I don't know if there's a lot of sneaker specific content out there like that that isn't just so like sensationalized. It's like crazy headline and whatever. So trying to get something for everybody, something that I think that's missing in the space.
Very nice. Yeah,
it'll be fun if it works out.
Yeah, I think people will love it, man. I mean, it's like anything that's a little different, but still, if you talk about sneakers, people will definitely flock to it. So I think you guys will have a hit on your hands when that does arrive. So good luck with that, man. But yeah, Dennis, man, I appreciate the time today, bud. I mean, I know you're busy as all get out. So I thank you for hanging out with us on the pod today. And let everybody know how to find you on your socials, man.
Yeah, Instagram's Dez Don't Care.
I don't.
No, I do. But, Instagram's Dez Don't Care. And then, obviously, you know, you'll see me on Nice Kicks here and there. A lot of the content that you'll see is coming through me and being on your put on your timeline. So, that's pretty much it.
Perfect, man.
Yeah, find me there.
Good stuff. Well, you guys heard him. Go follow him. Go follow Nice Kicks as well. Also, if you haven't already liked, subscribed to this Sneaker History Podcast, make sure you do that and drop some comments. Not only for us, drop some for Dez. Tell him what you love the show. And until next time, guys, see ya.
Hey, y'all. Nick here. One more thing before you take off. Do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.